From her crumbling bunker, a post-apocalyptic librarian explores the wasteland, recovers books, and keeps the flame of knowledge alive.
An eccentric traveler with tales slightly more than believable wanders the wilds in search of fine beers, good company, and strange artifacts.
A wheeling-dealing maverick, not averse to a new scheme or hustle, keeps an eye out for the next wealthy dupe or pursuing lawman.
They find themselves together, traveling the long roads of Texas, meeting steampunk luminaries, and stumbling across outrageous fortune.
Tonight, they report back to you, through strange telegraph technology, on the latest happenings, interesting trivia of our steampunk world in the great state of Texas.
Join us now for the Texas Steampunk Connection.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You have reached the Texas Steampunk Connection. Again, it is Tuesday night, April the 2nd, and we're at it again. We are days away from the Galveston Steampunk Festival, and I'm sure you are just as excited as we are about going a little mini vacation to the coast and seeing all of our friends and having a glorious time. Johnny Steverson, the owner of the Galveston Steampunk Festival, is in the audience tonight, as well as Rita and Lawrence Allen. Thank you all for joining us. I'm trying to like not think about it during the week so I don't just have a freak out. I'm wondering if you are already packing. In my head, no. I am, but yeah, not till
Friday morning. I just got my skirts from Kitty last week, so yeah.
Ooh, nice.
Outfit provided by Fair Treasures, Kitty Vinson.
Keeping her well-funded.
Yes. Hey, she deserves it.
I'm glad she was able to, take care of you.
She came through in a pinch.
It's right in the middle of her fair season. She's been working, the Sherwood Forest Fair.
Sherwood, and I think, doesn't Scarborough roll right in?
Like, overlaps it by a couple of weeks.
That's so right, yeah.
Places at once, so
yeah.
We are not going to see her this weekend, which is a damn shame. But we will miss her.
We will.
She's in our hearts.
Always.
Anything else happened this week, this last 2 weeks, that need mention? I got COVID.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Last weekend, Erica had it. And then by Sunday night and Monday morning, I was starting to feel the effects myself and was out of work for the week. But I'm feeling fine now. I mean, I had inoculations some few years ago, and they kind of helped, I hope.
You're supposed to redo it every year, which I have not.
I mean, here you are still, standing, sitting.
I'm still here. Well, I'm glad you feel better.
Thanks.
You do feel better, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't get it nearly as bad as other people who've relayed their stories on me now that they heard I haven't. Oh, let me tell you about mine. Woo! I didn't have nearly so bad.
I think I've had it once. And I mean, they tested us and said we were negative, but it's still, it was a miserable week. Yeah.
Yeah. Symptoms can persist even after the COVID itself has left your system. So that's super fun.
I know a little bit about COVID myself.
You've had it a few times, haven't you?
I've had every variant.
So you're like a COVID magnet.
Several times, right?
Some of them several times. Yeah.
He's personally mutating COVID.
In my backyard. No, it's because I touch a bunch of keyboards. I'm having to like sanitize keyboards.
Gloves?
Well, yes, and alcohol. And so I do a lot of cleaning at my job too, because
yeah.
It's biohazard. Most people don't realize how bad keyboards are.
Oh, no, I've turned keyboards over and watched my snacks fall out of them. So
I know. Yeah, and then there's hair and skin and the grease on your fingers. It's like you should wash your hands every time you go type. Not that everything. Laptops are especially bad.
Yellow!
Yes.
Yes! Have you been working your way through it? Are you crazy
yet? I had to dig it out of the bottom of a pile just tonight to have it on hand. But I have found that there is an audiobook on YouTube, and so I'm going to listen to that while I'm working.
It's good. So yeah.
By this weekend, I'll probably have it read or listened to. Not the same as read.
It starts out spooky, and then the later stories get a little... But it's very, very 1920s, very Art Deco, you know. So it's delightful. There's actually a time travel story in that one, too, I think. So it's been a long time since I read it. But yeah, it's got a time travel roaring 20s story. So yeah, nice. Really. Yeah.
And Jack has got all kinds of animals now.
Got a cosmic horror right here in my pocket.
No. Right. Oh, puppy with a neck pillow.
Why does he still have a neck pillow? Did he have some sort of medical problem?
No, she's just very small and can get through fences.
Oh, I see. Yes,
this is like an anchor.
It's a pocket dog.
Because she's actually pretty small. I mean, okay, well, she looks huge in all this mess, but she's actually very tiny.
Oh,
however, we do have some other cosmic horrors here. This is the newest cosmic horror. See, look at that.
Oh my God.
That's pretty cosmic horror-y right there.
Oh, I love it. I love it. There's two.
All right, flip me back.
So our podcast listeners, Jack is throwing up the kittens.
Beautiful, beautiful. White, smushy faces.
Yeah, they're smushy faces. They have blue eyes right now. They kind of look like that thing from Starship Troopers that, like, sucks the brains out of people. It really looks like that.
No! They're babies.
It's afraid!
They're babies.
They are babies. And they will be much more adorable here shortly. Like, any day now.
I love them. I want to smush them. I have an 18-pound bastard. I want a kitten again.
Well, I have two kittens. I'm joking.
Oh, I'll trade you. No.
No, I don't. But yeah, I do have a third cat. Y'all know Nears. But she's fun. She's like calico that we saved in our the front of our HOA, and she's a huntress. She's fantastic. The dog, yeah, the German Shepherd's like, oh, it's Big Sister. Yet she's like 8 pounds versus the German Shepherd, who just thinks she's the coolest thing on the planet.
Oh, I love German Shepherds. Awesome. I found out, I've been watching too much true crime, and I found out that the LA County Coroner's Office has a cadaver dog named Indiana Bones.
That's
fantastic. She's a very good girl.
She better not rebury any of her bones.
Oh, she's a good girl. Yeah.
We named the dog Indiana.
Indiana.
I like Indiana. We named it. You named after the dog.
We named the monkey Jack.
Oh, no.
Thank you, Jack. Yeah, that was a good line.
So let's get to drinking. We've got conversations to have tonight. Yes, I'm excited.
We're going to have our alcohol with our cosmic horror.
It's the only thing keeping us sane.
All right. Well, I'm boring as usual. I'm still on my Cayman Jack canned margarita mango tonight.
You know, for you, that's actually a reach. You realize that. That's like out there for you.
Is it?
No.
You're
usually like wine.
I've done drunk beer and wine.
Wine.
Not always.
I would love to just do a montage of just like
Beth drinking wine.
Beth drinking wine. Blue Stockings montage of wine drinking.
Blue Stockings wine mom moments.
Those are the best moments.
That's fine.
What are you drinking?
Yeah.
So I had that value pack, the value pack. What the heck you got? The multi pack things from Real Ale Brewing.
Oh, okay.
And this is the Imperial Ale Commissar Stout. So. Did I drink this one last week?
No,
I think you
had the quad last week.
Okay. Yeah, this sounds familiar though. Oh, they have the quad at Harvest House, by the way. Yeah, because so I had probably, it once and it was a lot.
Yeah, the one I probably haven't drank on here yet. That's the other one is the hard, I think, real hard or something like that.
Okay,
I don't remember what that's.
It's the blue one in the package. I've already had one, and I was like, I got to save at least one of these for each weekend, and I'm down to it left. So I'm assuming I haven't drank. I don't know if I drank the Commissar on screen or I didn't drink that.
It sounds familiar. I don't know how else I would have heard of it, but I don't know.
I think I brought these beers to the team some year or two ago. They are so good.
Possibly. I recognize the label, so I know I've seen it on here at some point.
It is creamy, thick, and still gets that little bite in the back of the right here.
It's a Lawrence kind of beer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Creamy beer doesn't really...
Okay, what I mean by
I'm not a beer aficionado.
It's smooth. It's not overly like Sprite.
It's not effervescent. Carbonated. It's more of a texture.
It's a smooth texture to it, so that it kind of like, you know, how water is not that smooth, but milk is. It kind of has that milky, like, kind of sliding feel to it.
You're not making it sound better. I'm just saying.
I don't. I never do, apparently.
Thax, what are you drinking tonight?
Okay. So I got the variety pack back in Christmas, and I'm working through Clown Shoes. This one is Burnt Caramel American Brown Ale. Okay. Don't know anything about it, except that it is a limited release, so I'll probably never get to have it again. All right. Let's see what we got. Yeah, it's brown. Yep.
Man, it's brown. So Lex says she hopes you don't like it. So you don't have to worry about it anymore.
Thanks, I guess. It has a sweet scent. It's not thick.
It's not creamy.
You can definitely smell the toasted caramel notes to it. And it's very good. It's got that toasted caramel, but it's a brown ale. So it's not like a porter or a stout. It's not dark and rich. It's smooth and light while still having that sweet caramelized flavor to it. It's very good. A shame that it is limited edition, because I would drink this more. It's very nice.
Huh. So it's kind of like caramelized popcorn.
I hate popcorn, so I would say no. I wouldn't call it. It's not buttery. It's just got that sweetness.
No, but he likes the drink. He doesn't like popcorn. So obviously he's a heretic. We'll have
to go that way. I know. I love popcorn. It's one of my favorite
things. Alex can't have popcorn, the kernel bits. Oh. But yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Is it an allergy or a...
Colitis. It's diverticulitis.
Oh,
that's a cosmic horror.
No. That is. I'm so sorry.
In the world of, you know, cosmic horror.
I mean, can she just like kind of eat the popcorn and spit the kernel part out?
So, yeah, kind of, yeah.
Just eat it like grapes.
Kernels are hard. So technically, she can either sit there and like nibble like a on one all around it, or I can go in and just bite the middle out of all the pieces of popcorn.
Just not worth it.
Wait, do you do that? Do you actually do that?
No. She can do corn cakes. Anything that's highly refined and broken up enough for the bits, but like any of the shell casings is a problem.
I am very sorry.
Yeah.
Alrighty then.
The more you know.
So let's get into the meat of this conversation tonight. If you've tuned in with us before in the last few episodes, we've been sort of breaking down first steampunk, then diesel punk. We're going through all the punks. And I extended to Jack and Blue Stocking, what should we talk about this week? And Jack said, horror punk. And I said, what the hell is that? And it is not what we thought it was.
No, I was thinking the same thing. Words. I forgot about the music genre. So I listened.
Wikipedia did not forget.
No, they did not, as I found out but like I said, there's splatterpunk, which is, it is horror punk. It is horror, but it's, I don't know if we're going to talk about that one on the show.
I don't think that's what we had in mind. But
that's like Friday the 13th.
Horror punk is a thing. It apparently is a musical genre that mixed
Misfits,
rock and 1950s doo-wop rockabilly with morbid violent imagery and
a lot of B movie references. Blitzkid is really, because that's not who I used to listen to, and they have a lot of like Frankenstein and the Wolfman references, and it's like rockabilly, but yeah, about B movies, like B horror movies. It's not bad.
I hadn't really heard of that before.
I dated a punk. I dated a guy with a mohawk and a long billy goat beard and, you know, went in Rome. That was a long time
ago. Your billy goat beard?
Of mine? No. That's gone now. No, that was a long time ago when I was not making the best decisions for my life. But yeah, so we're going to talk about Lovecraftian horror right. and the whole Cthulhu shebang.
Cosmic horror.
Cosmic horror.
What started out as weird fiction or weird tales, if you're familiar with the magazine of the same title, that started in the late 19th century and then into the early 20th century, that grabbed pieces from supernatural fiction and science fiction and gothic horror and sort of blended that together, pulling folk tales and romanticism and fantasy while doing away with the tropes associated with those and making something weird. And that is the best explanation I could get about weird fiction. It is kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
Different authors treat it different ways, but you know it when you're reading it.
Mm-hmm. Which definitely
is not helpful. But Edgar Allan Poe, I guess, is really one of the godfathers of weird fiction. And then later came H.P. Lovecraft, who actually coined the term weird fiction because they weren't calling it that yet. But then he got into the cosmic horror that we are much more familiar with, I think, or Lovecraftian horror. And that's where we find ourselves tonight. And we're probably going to jump all over the place with these and hopefully
because it's
some topic.
It is all over the place. I mean, like I said, between, you know, Poe and Lovecraft, there was, like we were talking about earlier, you know, Chambers doing The King in Yellow. And then there was Ambrose Bierce, who wrote some really wild stuff. And like I was saying earlier, if you've never read An Occurrence at Owl Creek, you need to. If you like twist endings and time travel, you need to read that. It's Civil War era, and it's really, really excellent. Oh, and also Ambrose Bierce mysteriously disappeared when he was in his 70s, and nobody knows what happened to him.
So
he just
took off. Do you think he did that to sell more books in the end?
Maybe. He just took off one day, went from the East Coast, somewhere in the East Coast, made his way through Texas down to Mexico, and they think he walked right into the middle of the Mexican Revolution. So the story is that he probably ended up, you know, put up against a wall and executed, which he thought would be a fantastic way to go. So yeah, but he was just gone. Nobody knows what happened. I think his final letter says something about, what did he say? It was wild. He said something about, as to me, I leave here tomorrow for an unknown destination. And then he was just gone.
See, I would leave something like that and travel straight north to Canada.
Nope, he went down to Mexico and never.
No, you go towards there, so it looks like you're going.
Veer that way. So yeah, he was a really, really good. Like I said, he was doing like the trippy twist endings that you didn't see a whole lot yet. He was way before M. Night Shyamalan and, you know, What a Twist. Yeah, he was back there in, you know, the 19th century doing that. So highly recommend. But Bierce kind of inspired Chambers. Chambers inspired Bierce. They both inspired Lovecraft. And also, I want to say, I'm not an expert in this. This is not my area of specialization. I just read a lot of it. So
this is a hobby.
It's a hobby, yes.
Conveniently, we're on one of my hobbies too, right here.
But I actually, one of my friends is writing his rhetoric dissertation about Lovecraftian horror. So, yep, Michael.
Now you bring him up. We could have
get him on the show.
Michael Cerliano. You know what? I didn't even think about it. I just remember everybody's writing such weird stuff in my department that I forgot. That's what he's doing, the rhetoric of Lovecraftian horror and weird fiction. So, yep, a lot of weird stuff. But
do we need to, like, table this for later until we get him here?
No way. No. I'm too deep into this now.
This is like, here we are in, like, Cosmic Horror 101, how to come to terms with your insignificant existence.
Well, okay, so like, what were your introductions? Because like, for me, to be honest, my introduction to anything Lovecraftian was Army of Darkness and the Necronomicon.
That's a good place to start.
I wanted to know what it was, and I asked my brother, and he explained it to me. Because people thought it was a real book, and it wasn't.
Of course it's a real book. I have it on my shelf over here.
Uh-huh. He does have it on his shelf, actually. I've been trying to steal it for years.
Is it really bound in human skin?
I mean, it smells like it.
Not my vert copy. It's goat hide. But we had Steve Metz on the show a couple of times. And he created a Necronomicon and had it written up and printed and hand bound in this goat leather, and it is super cool. but I mean, it's not the Necronomicon. You can find a number of different books touting, claiming to be such,
claiming to be the real,
But see, I love the one that Steve made for me. That's cool. Is fantastic. Yeah. but yeah, let's talk about HP.
Weird dude.
He was apparently afraid of everything.
Yes, HP Lovecraft is scared of everything.
Apparently just took it all the way down to the worst conclusion possible to being, you know, gods from space.
And that's why I think it's we latch onto it because it is sort of in our historical timeline for steampunk, but it is not a punk genre. It is doing away with the whole anti-establishment punk thing and exploring something much more visceral, that fear that Lovecraft was so focused on. And that's what makes it very different. You can have a cosmic horror story in a steampunk genre book, but it is going down a different path.
Yeah, there's a lot of Lovecraft and there's a lot of steampunk Lovecraft. Peter Jelly Clark, he does a lot of them. He does a whole bunch of black character centered steampunk stories that do have Lovecraftian characters and horrors and werewolves in some of them. But yeah, so he does use that mythos as well. So it is you can find it wrapped up because it's steampunk is already weird, you know, and then you throw the rising from his grave and so it's I don't know it's but also, I mean, it's like anything. It's the time that it rose up. Horror that rises up and is new generally is very telling about the time that it's coming or the time that it came from. And the world was opening up. There was a lot of unknown things happening. You know, we had telegraphs. We were getting telephones. We had trains. We had, the boats that could easily and comfortably travel across oceans. We could talk to people on the other side of the world. And so people were coming in contact with other people that they had never experienced before. And that's scary. And,
The method of these things happening, we take for granted now. But the idea that you could hear the voice of someone across the country just out of this box, it's spooky. It's like,
well, let alone ghost, the other side of town.
The ghost of somebody's voice from beyond somewhere.
Yeah.
And the telegraph. They didn't hear about a modem yet.
Yeah, I mean, they had, telegraphs that you could, get news. I mean, it wasn't 24-hour news, but it was, for that time, it was almost pretty much 24-hour news. You know, early radios were starting to be built, so it was a strange time. And if you were, the little mentally unstable, then, you had a whole lot of things you were afraid of. And so that's, and people latched onto it. I mean, they really latched onto it. It was very popular.
That's what made it, makes it to me a very like the opposite side of the coin from steampunk. We're very we're excited about new technology, new things we can do with technology. Whereas with cosmic horror, you are afraid of that technology. The idea of technology is bad and spooky and
what can that technology do to you?
Ungodly. Yes.
Yeah. What horrors will it bring? You know, if you can't, get away from people because they can get you in your home. They can call you up in your home. You know, back in a time when there was no caller ID or star 69 or answering machines. Your phone rang, you were going to answer it because it had to be important. You know, so yeah, technology was bringing people much closer together than they were used to being. You know, much more contactable. So it was, then monsters.
I mean, it's not even a very big jump from this newfangled telegraph and telephone to ghost radio, which now we roll our eyes and that's some cuckoo ghost hunter stuff. But, technology wasn't understood anyway. Why couldn't you make a phone call to someone who is no longer on this plane of existence?
Yeah.
How is that any different than a phone call from California?
Yeah, you already don't necessarily understand how it works anyway, so it's traveling through ether.
The amount of like just superstition hanging around, like you said, new technology. Like people didn't want it to get their photographs taken because they're afraid it was going to steal their soul.
Yeah,
and So that gives a whole new world of issue if it really did.
Although photography devolved pretty quick once people realized that they could, you know, especially if they could develop their own pictures, they figured out what, you know, what, how much fun cameras could be. So that one didn't take long to catch a hold in the imagination, I think.
Nobody could give a kid a cell phone, see what happens, you know? Suddenly
it's always amazing how new tech, the thing that's on the cutting edge of new technology is always pornography.
I mean, it's like rule 34.
Do you know where most movie cameras are going? The cameras that made Attack of the Clones. I could
give you an answer, but it would be inappropriate.
Star Wars Attack of the Clones. After they were developed for like 4K high definition stereo, like, you know, stereo imagery, next thing they went to the porn industry. Straight in. They were sold straight off after Attack of the Clones, right into there.
Yeah, there was pornographic tintypes. And the Victorians loved to take dirty pictures. I mean, they were, yeah. And they got passed around like trading cards. Yeah, it was, that's what we do. Oh, and cats. Pornography and cats.
That is the internet. They were looking for the internet. They didn't have it yet.
So, yeah, we stopped being afraid of photography. I think
they created the theory and thought on how to transition information through fiber optics. Fiber optics and the fax machine were developed like in the 1850s, the ideal of them on paper. So we were really trying to get to the internet.
Yeah, I mean, we were just barreling ahead, but that's where the scary comes in.
We were trying to get to the internet. We were trying to get to cats and pornography. I mean, and the internet is now how we do that in, you know,
another, and someday it'll be something else.
It's another multi-hundred year dedicated build.
Rita is correct. There are some illuminated manuscripts with some very naughty marginalia and also cats. There's a lot of them with cat paw prints on them. But yeah, there are, if you really look at some deep at some of the illuminated manuscripts, because they get wild with all of the detail. Yeah, there's porn in that too. So, and now we've veered off.
Look at the Sistine Chapel. Michelangelo worked a lot of stuff into those edges.
True. Yeah. Can't always tell what's hiding in there. Back to Lovecraft.
Going off topic, but I'm going to for just a second.
Okay.
Did you guys see the movie about Louis Wayne? He was a turn of the century artist who he was a little unbalanced, but he drew cats. He drew lots and lots of cats and became became very popular among people. And I guess prior to him, cats weren't considered pets so much as tools to keep your barn from being infested with rats. Yep. But he sort of caught
the cuteness
heartstrings of Americans and the English, and redefined cats as being cuddly pets.
And now they live in our homes and we clean them.
And next, at this rate, the next ones will be raccoons that live in our house.
Oh, raccoons are spicy little bastards.
They are not house trainable.
I'm assuming the same people said the same thing about cats only 100 years ago.
Cats still aren't house trainable. I mean, you cannot.
We didn't train cats. The cats literally just decided, okay, this is fine.
I live inside them.
You can't teach a cat to not to do something. You can only teach them that they should do it when you're not around. Like, everybody's like, because the pictures of cats on counters, like, it's filthy. Cats on the counter. I don't let my cats do that. Yeah. You're not in the house all the time. Trust me. They're doing it.
They watch you leave.
Yeah.
They sit there licking that one paw and they just hold it there for a minute, wait for a second, put it back down, wait for you to make sure you don't just double back. And immediately get up on the counter, start knocking stuff
make their
off.
Circuit through the house. Their dirty little paws. So, yeah, it happens.
My cats don't do that because I don't have cats.
True.
Anyway,
my cat's on roughshod. Okay, so anyway, back to it.
So, H.P. Lovecraft, a great quote I kept running across. The oldest and strongest emotion of mankind is fear. And the oldest and strongest kind of fear is the fear of the unknown. Which really encapsulates a lot of what his cosmic horror is trying to be, trying to describe, just the indescribable.
What's the alcohol volume on that beer?
It's pretty good. I've heard a number of people say Lovecraft wasn't a very good writer; that he was terrible.
Are you referring to me and not saying it?
No, I. Was that you?
It's been
that was me. Yes, I said it on the last episode. I think that there are other writers who have used his work as a stepping stone and written better things. That's
okay. All right.
No, I don't think it was a great writer, but like I said, I like what he came up with.
I
that's just me.
Okay. I think for the fact that I'm the going thought to of something it, indescribable and being indescribable and him trying to describe something indescribable over and over and over.
Say indescribable one more time.
Indescribable. It's indescribable. It's unfathomable.
Indescribable. That is the trick, right? He's trying to portray this story of horror, and he's not able to describe the monster because once you establish what it is no longer the unknown. It's no longer scary.
Yeah. Look at Signs, the movie. The alien wasn't scary once you know what it looked like. You're like, oh, I don't know why
I freaked out. Like, I know a lot of people didn't really like Blair Witch. I loved it. And the reason it scared me so bad is because you never saw it. You never saw the monster. You just knew that something bad was in the dark. And that's you know,
those are the best kind of horror.
Yeah. With Lovecraft, I mean, something bad is in the dark.
I didn't buy into Blair Witch. And I guess that's what it didn't get me.
It depend on the people you watched it with because it was easy enough. But then I'm also like, I've been on Boy Scout camps where people do crap to your tent. I'm not too worried. Like the whole tent scene, I'm like, eh. That broke my broke my attention a little bit.
But I am very much afraid of the dark. I sleep with battery powered candles in my bedroom on all night and in the bathrooms. See, I am afraid of the dark.
It got interesting. It ended when he got to the building and all the stuff was like happening. Like, oh,
finally we got to the story. And then
still never saw it.
They drop the camera on the ground. And you're like, oh,
yeah. What is it?
My money back.
Yeah, it's a scary thing. You don't know what it is. So your brain is going to create all of these things, which is what, you know, Lovecraft did. He read these stories of, you know, Bierce and Chambers and combined with his own mental situation, he came up with, and I can see where he came up with it. I mean, if, like I said, if you don't know what's out there, your brain's going to fill that in. It's just,
I'm actually talking to someone about that today. We have moths out in West Texas, and I'm pretty sure we have them here. I just haven't seen them here. That are really big.
Oh, and at night,
they sound like thrumming hummingbirds that have no exhaust pipe.
They're like blood sucking moths. They're
horrible. So you hear them at night flying around. You know what they are now, but you have a flashlight. They'll fly in front of the flashlight and they'll go up like this. So you just see this weird like shape with all the weird crud on their wings and whatnot. And it's just kind of like, I can imagine how ghosts and things came around by just like people wandering around with a torch. And then suddenly this thing flies towards it and does this. And you freak out. You drop everything. Just try to, your brain is trying to sit there figuring out what just went down. And it's like, I must have ran into a spirit.
Weirdly enough, there's a podcast called Tanis. And it is about it. It is a lot of it has to do with the Lovecraftian Eldritch horrors. And they talk about August Derleth and Chambers. And one of the scary things, it takes place in the Pacific Northwest. And there are really, really large, scary, like moths. Like the moth is the symbol for the podcast. And yeah, there's really big, scary moths out in the woods. It's like a heavy part of it's a really good podcast.
Like skulls and stuff because you get the big white thing and they have like the little white, the black holes down here.
They're terrifying.
Like, what is
this?
I
like moths.
And me too. I love them to death. But
they're ugly butterflies. I don't like
them. I think they're cool. I'm sorry. They're ugly butterflies and they still
lunar
get around
moths
and
beautiful. Lunar moths are very pretty. We had those, a surprising number of them where I used to live in Pennsylvania. It's we had those. They were very pretty. But yeah, so. Yeah, you were going to debate me, Thax, about Lovecraft.
I think his writing, his inability to describe something solidly is necessary for the genre he's trying to create. But it also, for me, gives this sort of weird dreamlike quality of to his writing that I've talked to friends who've read Lovecraft before going to bed. So that's
smart. No, I wouldn't do that.
and fallen asleep and just had these crazy, vivid, creepy dreams that were just brought on because of the way he writes and the way he describes things that just sort of pull you into this subconscious space that I thought was fascinating.
It gets you thinking on a different plane you're not used to.
Yeah, let me rephrase. I'm not saying he is objectively a bad writer. I just don't really care for the style, for the way he writes. It just hits my ear weird. I don't.
Well, with that said, I will say this as well. The original Sherlock Holmes, the novels, like written in the 1900s.
I cannot get through those.
They're hard to read.
They're
really hard to read.
Yeah, and however, I've read stuff from that
having
period.
Having someone reading them to you is a lot easier to understand. Yeah. The books on tape of the original one is good.
Yeah, I mean, I'll read Edith Wharton, and that stuff is dense. But Shakespeare, Sherlock, just I don't know. I tried.
He has a different way of writing for every character because of the different accents of their cadences interchange.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful way to write, but it's hard to read if you don't know those accents as like deeply as he does. And as most people, I assume that his membership, that his viewership was used to.
Yeah.
And so, but that was another thing is I can't read a whole lot of stuff from the 1800s. It's just hard to, and you keep going backwards and you're just like,
I think part of the difference, mate, it may also be how it started. Some of those, like the Sherlock stories or like Dickens or, you know, even Poe, those started as serialized stories. They had to be written a certain way because they weren't coming out in a book. They were coming out in chunks, you know, each week or whatever in the newspaper. And so it had to be written in a certain manner to
certain keep cadence. Up with
that. Yeah. And even in Lovecraft stuff would come out in the magazine. So it wasn't necessarily all written, you know, to come out in one shot. So it's a little bit, some of them, the pacing and the tone is going to be different. Like I said, because I you know, Dickens, hard
it's
to
like
read.
It's like watching a 25-minute television show that ends on a cliffhanger every week to make sure you catch it again.
Yeah. So, you know, just differences. That's all.
It's like, come and get your new scare. I'm going to show you what's really scary next week.
Yeah, but I imagine, I imagine back then it was absolutely terrifying. And people were, you know, people that were interested in that kind of fiction were on the edge of their seat to see what was coming next because, you know.
And the occult was huge back then.
Oh, yeah. As Stax has
right into it.
Stax's outfit shows us tonight.
And his book of goat bound skin.
Speaking of books bound in human skin, Harvard, uh-oh, the one that they have, they are removing the cover from that book. And because nobody knows whose body it came from. So it's classified as desecration and remains. So they're trying to be respectful. So they're apparently they have more than one. So they are.
They actually do. And a lot of them are written by the professors there, I believe, that gave their own skin to it once they died.
I imagine they're looking at the provenance of the skin, you know, but a lot of these things, not necessarily, it came from someone that, you know.
But can you imagine as much work as you put into your dissertation, if you died, wouldn't you want a version of it bound in your own skin?
Like, wrap it in my tattooed skin.
Exactly.
So that my tattoos are preserved for all
time.
Then
you give it to your children.
Authors are clearly strange.
Well, but usually
one wants
kind of
to be on a firing squad in Mexico.
Or...
Another one wants their ass wrapped around a book. Authors are weird.
Isn't it great? It takes all kinds to run the civilization, doesn't it?
Yes, that's going to be in my will, that I want all of my tattoos removed and preserved and the rest of me cremated. You'll just have all of my tattoos and frames.
With these little like glass like things with like nails in it, like stretching out the tattoos, like in like a diorama on like someone's mantle with the urn sitting there. And the dissertation like in there, like at
the
very
dissertation
nice...
right next to it, yeah. Yep.
Moisturize me.
Moisturize me. You're talking out of your ass. Actually, one time on Facebook, one of my friends posted a picture of that. He was like, I just ran across this doing a Google search. What is this from? And I was like, Doctor Who! It's Cassandra! And I shared the YouTube clip of her doing the Moisturize Me.
She hasn't heard
I think he became a fan
again.
After that.
Jesus.
Speaking of weird things that no one should see. Did y'all see...
Unfathomable horror.
Did y'all watch Lovecraft on HBO? That sadly only got one season. You never watched
My mother-in-law has, but I have not.
It was a black cast. It was set in, I want to say Chicago? It's been a long time. It's been a couple of years, but I think it was in the 50s. And there's a lot of Jim Crow laws wrapped into it. It's from a book. And the book is excellent. The book is like everybody's stories, like the characters, it goes through telling their stories. So it is in different voices. And you know, that's hard to jump around for some people, but it's really good. And yeah, it does actually come up. It kind of has a reckoning with that, you know, Lovecraft's personal prejudices and issues. And it all kind of comes together, but it's splatterpunk definitely comes in there because it is gnarly in some spots. But yeah, it was interesting, and it only got one season. Yeah, it's some of those horrors, or HBO did a really good job bringing them to life. So,
I mean, Westworld is a pretty good horror.
Westworld is hard to describe. I didn't see the final season either. Well, it got pulled from the original
movie. I've never seen the recreation.
It was excellent
TV series.
Ooh, from what I've got of seeing part of the first season, it was nuts. Like
it was really good.
It feels very like when I was talking about steampunk a couple years ago, they're like Westworld. I'm like, yeah, to a degree. There's some steampunk in there, or at least there's some. It was hard to kind of explain. That's robots. Just the old Wild West. You know,
yeah.
So
yeah. It was, yeah, it's excellent. And it's also one of those that's big on the twists of who is a robot and who is not. And also, like, that first season, you have to pay attention to Dolores and what's going on in her, the main character, what's going on around her, because there's two different timelines that are running and you don't necessarily realize that. And so you've got to pay attention to her. You have to focus on her. Yeah, but because she's a really good character. She's a robot. She's a really good character. And she says at one point, she says, you know, people come here to tell a story. I wrote the story where I'm not, what does she say? Where I don't have to be the damsel anymore, you know, and she starts to become sentient. Yeah. So it's really good. It's an excellent show.
Yeah, Evan Rachel Wood was,
big fan. So, but I didn't get a chance to see the final season before HBO pulled it from the channel. Like they've been pulling everything else. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can buy it on Amazon.
Yeah. It's coming back around to where owning media might be smart because all these places are just taking, you just leave it up because it's more content for you to be hosting all the time.
It has to do with money.
Or be selling it to somebody else or releasing it to syndicating it out somewhere else. So they're making money on it.
But they get tax breaks. That's why so many movies have been created and then shelved right at the very end because they get tax breaks on it.
Yeah. Like one of my best, my freaking cartoon I was really enjoying, Final Space. TBS literally canned it for tax reasons. And and they own the creator.
We got to get back to buying our media. I've been buying paper. Yeah, I've been buying hardcovers of my favorite
books as media. Much as
I
can.
I mean, like physical copies.
Owning a physical does the physical copy have to be, you know, like
a copy that you don't have
proper packaging?
Log into Amazon to watch is what I mean, or pull up, you know, on Kindle or whatever. Yeah,
I was just thinking, like I probably could get it to you on a thumb drive.
Okay, back to let's step away from the piracy and back to Thax's love
Cosmic Horror. So, because of Cosmic Horror's themes of the unknown and, you know, losing one's sanity and that sort of thing, it's become very difficult to recreate the writings in a movie or TV format.
Yeah.
So what are some films that you found to be particularly either excellent at showing what cosmic horror is like or films that were terrible?
Well, like I said, Lovecraft Country was a show that did it very well. But like you said, it's hard. I mean, I have one thing that I found is that the podcasts that focus on this do a really excellent job with the, because you still, you get the sounds and, you know, so it's heightened that way, but you don't get to see it. But I honestly can't think of any what movies are there? Cause I can't think of any.
So
maybe I'm just not watching them.
The Thing comes to mind for me.
The Thing. Yeah. True.
Weird Fiction, cosmic horror. I don't know if that is a good example or a bad example. Cause you do get to see the monster a number of times and it's sort of less scary, but also I want to see more of it. it's giving the audience what they want, which is kind of cool.
Once you know what it looks like, it's not unknown anymore. So it's right, you can right. frame it, you can give it rep, you know.
But it was still a really good movie. Really
that's been
well,
a long time since
well
I've
done.
Seen that. Yeah. I don't know. I can't really think of anything where
there is one. So a lot of like the Outer Limits why can't it come up? The original version of
Twilight Zone
or this last decade's variant, Love, Death, and Robots. There is an episode in it. There's The Mist. That's a good one for sure. The one that immediately struck me as cosmic horror, quite literally, was what was the name of it? Beyond the Aquila Rift. It was the space one where this spacer gets on this space station and essentially runs into this girl. And basically, she's the only one left on the spaceship. And it's weeks before you start realizing there's something wrong. And by the end of it, you realize that he is no longer on the spaceship. his spaceship has been gobbled up because it made a wrong jump and ended up in a different like pocket dimension, and he's slowly being eaten alive by this thing in space that is treating him like she loved, you know, basically just he's dying anyway because it's a pocket dimension or something. Or and so it is really crazy and worth watching the whole way through. It is awesome, but it's definitely a twist near the end. You're just like, it's coming, you know, it's coming, you just don't know how it's gonna like reveal itself.
I was looking at the list of 30 coins. It's a Spanish language show. It is current. It is on Max. It is batshit. And it is it's about a priest, an old priest with dual pistols covered in tattoos. And he is fighting for
containing it around.
It's about the Judas coin, the 30 coins, the 30 silver that Judas was paid. And in this story, the Judas coins are, they move throughout history and people get them. People will kill to get them. They fight over them. They die. But these people are influential and powerful. But yeah, because they have a lot of, because I was reading this again, the Elder Signs. And then they also have, they have the gods like I can never say that name. Nyarlathotep. I can't say these names. So yeah, 30 coins. It's really excellent. And yeah, Event Horizon. That was
one of the best lines ever. So Lawrence Fishburne, best line you ever can say in a horror movie, looks up, is watching the camera, and what happened, and immediately sees everything just go nuts, and he's like, we're leaving. In the whole movie, he's trying to get back to his spaceship.
That was excellent, and actually, In the Mouth of Madness.
Yeah, I was about to bring that up myself.
Sam Neill. Yeah, that movie scared. I saw that one in the theater, too, and that scared the poop out of me. That was so good. When that guy comes busting through the plate glass window with the axe at the beginning. Oh my god. And the little old lady ended up with her husband behind the camera. Yeah. So good. Oh, I haven't watched that in a long time either. Okay, yeah. I'm gonna make a list of things that I need to watch.
I've been trying to get my brother-in-law Alex, who likes horror movies, and my wife, who hates horror movies, to all both sit down and watch In the Mouth of Madness with me. But there's been some pushback. Jack, have you seen it?
I have not seen it.
You've never seen it? Excellent.
It plays with this sort of Stephen King character who's a writer of horror novels. And so instead of like a Necronomicon or a single book, it's his series of books that drive you to madness and open up portals to other places.
Yeah,
and
his books, yeah. And that's the John Carpenter movie too. So yes. Yeah. Oh. Carpenter, yeah.
That is true.
Yeah, Sam Neill was fantastic.
Oh yeah, so like gross. What it used to be.
So gross. Yeah. It was just there was a lot going on in it, but it was really excellent. Oh yeah, I forgot Charlton Heston was in that too. Yeah.
Oh. Didn't know that.
So yeah. Been a while. Highly recommend. When is it? In 94 it came out. Yeah. It's spooky. Yeah, it's very good. So actually, now that I'm looking at this, it's reminded me a lot of things that I didn't realize. Like Supernatural, the TV show, has ventured into in different spots. Oh yeah,
no, Supernatural was fantastic.
Yeah, that definitely ventured into it in different places, and Sabrina does too. The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Because they used Carcosa in that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, I guess I didn't realize how often it actually pops up.
I think cosmic horror is one of those that, like, even the Tiny Toons ventured into cosmic horror. It's one of those things that you tend to kind of like. I know you're just gonna laugh a little.
But, well, apparently Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles did too.
Yeah, but it's just one of those little things that it's like flying closer to the sun for TV shows that are kind of like, what else do we do? And we need the unknown thing. And so every time they go a little closer to the sun, just each time making a little more cosmic horror in every little thing. It's one reason I do feel like it's part of steampunk, but it's just kind of that you don't open the box.
Yeah.
Like, I don't open the box. You just don't open the box, you know? Well, so
what's
there's
the box, Jack?
Don't open the box. Even collection from the 90s, leave it alone.
Even the first season of True Detective, it had, because when I watched it, I'm like, wait a minute, I know that name. I know Carcosa. What is that? That's from Chambers, King in Yellow. So yeah, they kind of venture into it too. So it pops up in weird places. South Park.
Yeah. If South Park hasn't done a thing with Cthulhu yet, they're missing out. I mean, that's just kind of, like I said, everything goes a little towards the unknown. And that happens to be the most widely known kind of unfathomable thing is the Cthulhu or any of those kind of just dark storylines like that, where the darkness can eat you.
An episode of The Librarians. I forgot they went to Miskatonic University. So. Yeah, it pops up, man. Also, I will say, there's a podcast called The Whisperer in Darkness. Or no, sorry, it's the Lovecraftian, Lovecraft Investigations. And they go, it's a modern take on his stories. It's kind of a found footage thing. And it's two investigators. And they go through different stories like Whisperer in Darkness and, Innsbruck.
Mm.
So, yeah, they go through a bunch of different ones. So that is a really excellent rendering of Lovecraft. So
yeah.
That one's really good.
I mean, it's been kind of those things that even my character has been dealing with that, because I've been my character's kind of connoisseur of antiquities. I've been collecting a lot of things, and I've actually been wanting to collect and actually have on my mantle the actual like statue of the Cthulhu statue that makes everyone go nuts. But then I started thinking about, like, is that really a smart thing to do? I don't know.
I need to get a copy of the Necronomicon and just like have it strapped across my back, carry that with me through the festivals.
Just have it on like a thigh just holster. Have it
like on a holster.
Like you pop the top off, just like Wild West style. Yeah, you get the draw and you pull it up.
Smoke effects.
You're sitting there trying to yell the three words as quickly as possible.
Klaatu Barata Nickel.
Necktie? Yeah, you should, like, as you pull it out, have a piece of paper that has everything spelled out except for the very end, which is ripped off.
There you go.
So you just try different endings every time.
So that's our take on weird fiction.
There's another
Thank
movie.
Thank you, Wikipedia.
I think it came out in the 70s, but it was called Season of the Witch.
Yes.
And I wouldn't call that cosmic horror, but it definitely is a weird tale.
Yeah.
Or is presented as one. It's a little slow in pacing. It's a product of its time period. It's about this wife and mother who's unhappy with her life, and she's seeing her daughter go out and have fun teenage stuff, and she brings a boyfriend home, and her mother falls out of her role as mother and wife, and starts to read trashy novels, and then she has an affair with her daughter's boyfriend, and she ends up killing her husband and practicing witchcraft. And it's a horror movie, but watching it now, it's just like, good for her. This is a story of female empowerment, and I'm there for it.
Own your agency. I am woman, hear me roar. So was it about the horror of women taking their own place in society as
actualized
human beings? So is it written from the fear of the men of that period?
It's written from a place of fear, but watching it from our perspective, there really isn't... it doesn't strike the chord that it's trying to.
Yeah, it's not so scary anymore. No, that's just world.
Which makes it all the more kind of weird the way this movie is treating itself so seriously. I don't know if that is falls within this theme, but I thought it kind of. Yeah,
I think the influence is kind of there in a lot of the stuff that we read and watch, and we don't necessarily realize it. Because mostly this has been in podcasts. Like, I'll hear something and they start talking about something. I'm like, wait a minute, why do I know that reference? Because they were, it's called Weeping Cedars, and they were referring to the monarch in amber. And I'm like, wait. Is that supposed to be a play on the king? And yeah, it's supposed to be a play on the king yellow. Because like instead of the yellow sign, it's the amber sign. So yeah, it's either it's referenced or it's, satirized to a certain extent, but it's everywhere. Oh, and it is 9 o'clock.
It's 9 o'clock, yeah.
That went fast.
I knew it would. This is a juicy topic.
This is, and it's almost like we need to have like a book report day on like, find your favorite book on this horror issue and bring it to just
Lovecraft Country.
Yeah.
And once again, this coming Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Steampunk, Galveston Steampunk Festival. You can still buy your tickets. You can still save money by buying them online now rather than getting them at the door. So do so. is there anything else we need to, I mean, I'm going to go into our patrons and thank everybody for helping us out. Is anything coming to mind that we need to throw out there?
Same thing as last time. If y'all have a punk or genre or something that you want us to cover, break let us know. Toss it in the comments or, you know, messages, or we're all on here. So shoot a message to one of us and, you know, we'll look into it. And
hire Skywriter, you know, get our attention.
Yes, get our attention somehow. We are all locatable.
Include a picture of a kitten.
Yes, that helps. Yes. That helps. Put free cats in the subject line, and I will be on it like crazy. That. Yes.
Yours is the first one opened.
So, yeah, just let us know because we'll take suggestions. You know, clean suggestions, please.
We have a different email for the other ones.
For just the steampunk after dark.
Texas Steampunk Connection is supported in part by J.R. Seeger's A School for the Great Game. An Edwardian teen, Elizabeth Bancroft, resents being sent to her finishing school in India. That school is, in fact, the British India School for Spies, teaching the family business of espionage, martial arts, and the Tibetan mystic arts. The School for the Great Game is the first in the Steampunk Garage series available on Amazon. Bit of a weird tale, if I've ever heard one. We're also supported, of course, by Fair Treasures, which has a selection of Texas-made female-presenting costumes and accessories for steampunks and Renaissance wear, one-of-a-kind imported jewelry. You can shop Fair Treasures at fairtreasures.com, fair spelled with an E, or on Etsy. So thank you, Kitty. At Fair Treasures for helping us. We are on Patreon, where you can go and help us out by buying us a beer. Our patrons out there, Jenny and Ryan Shaver, longtime supporters. Jenny just had surgery for some sort of spinal condition, so now she's a cyborg. She'll show you her scars.
Scarpunk.
Also, certified aeronaut Natalie McTavish is one of our Patreons. And I really appreciate the generous grant from the crew of the airship Aberfeldy, Rita and Lawrence Allen, who are with us tonight. Thank you guys for tuning in. I hope this was interesting, educational, or at least entertaining.
I actually do have one thing to drop real quick. Let's not forget the eclipse is on Monday, and Austin, I believe, has declared a state of emergency, and a lot of other places in Texas, and everyone in the path is declaring it. Get your gas early. Try to avoid the highways because it's apparently going to be bonkers. The traffic, like big trucks are banned from the highways in Texas from midnight to midnight the day of the eclipse.
Really?
So. Yeah. Yes, it's like I said.
This many people who are willing to travel. I've been talking to the police departments around here.
Yeah, Oklahoma is.
All local governments are pretty much closed on Monday as well.
Dallas is supposed to see an influx of, I can't remember what it was. It's and I think Oklahoma is expecting like 170,000 people, extra people to come into the state. So, it's going to be. And everybody, when we're leaving Galveston.
If you've watched the weather reports, the weather from Dallas to Austin is going to be a mess. It's unlikely you're going to see anything. Doesn't mean you can't go to your local nursery and buy a strange plant that you've never seen before. Highly recommend. What's the worst that could happen?
Bring home your own cosmic horror. So yeah, just y'all be careful this weekend going there, and especially coming back. If you're coming back Sunday or Monday, take a gas can in your car. Just, you know, if you get stuck on the highway. Somebody shared a post from the city of Denton about it. And also cell service could possibly be disrupted as well. So
I may see about just, you know, calling in sick to work that day.
I've already requested the day off.
So I did that for Friday. I didn't do that for Monday. That's my problem.
Yeah, I'm just going to work from home. But so everybody be careful on the way there and the way back. I mean, I know what it was. Dallas hotels are 95% taken up right now. 95% of the Dallas hotels are.
Wow.
It's like I said, all the way up through New York, everybody's planning on emergency. So, or just a lot of traffic. So, yes, be careful. Careful on your way there. I want to see all of y'all.
Okay. You know, for the moment that Cthulhu enters the porthole, the vortex that comes out of the moon when everything aligns perfectly.
tentacles everywhere. Okay.
I'll have my gas can with me.
Okay. Well, that was all I wanted to say.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Good thinking. Our opening music was is called Horses to Water by Topher Moore and Alex Selena. And our graphic designer is Megan Higgins. So thank you, Megan. I'm going to pass this over to our founder, and he'll take us out.
So once again, thank you for listening. You can find us again on Facebook at Texas Steampunk Connection for any comments, questions, suggestions. If you know of something happening steampunk that's happening soon, we can put it on our calendar, on our Patreon, as well as the list of over 100 comics and graphic novels, steampunk and Weird West related.
You can also email us at TexasSteampunkConnection@gmail.com. And we're a streaming podcast, TexasSteampunkConnection.podbean.com.
And if you lose it on Facebook and you want to watch a rerun of this show at any point in time on YouTube, you can go find them on Steam Chest.
And although we've made many, many jokes about Twitter, you can look for us at TX Steam Connect 1 on Twitter.
I never use it. I never look at it. I don't know. I don't understand Twitter. Yeah, so yeah, once again, thank you very much. And until next time, mind your gauges.